Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXOradio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio. Let's Talk About It for Imperial and Mexicali Valley. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingüe.
Our phone number is 337-8874. Put that on speed dial.
Yeah.
And get in today, because today, again, we have a psychiatrist, Dr. Vijay Chimanchetti, and he works for behavioral health, and he works in children's and adults, right, with children's and adults populations in the lovely town of Brawley.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how is Brawley? I miss working up there.
Well, see, I don't get to see a whole lot of Brawley because most of the time I'm in the office.
He's busy seeing clients and patients, so.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't live in Brawley, so I only go there on weekdays. Enter my office, come back. So I think.
How about the people of Brawley? I mean, you kind of interact with them, right?
Yeah. Well, see, I'm not sure whether. I have not lived in the Valley long enough to be able to differentiate people from Brawley or from Imperial or from El Centro. I think that for me, if I take a broader look, I see commonalities between people of the Valley, but
yeah,
when compared to other cities. But I guess I'm not there yet to differentiate Brawley.
But
another 10 years,
yeah,
you'd be like a venture. You'll be able to like take a sip and say, oh, okay, Brawley, mid-70s. And
but we have, I mean, it's rare that we have a psychiatrist on our show, so
this is
exactly.
So the topic today is depression for older age adults. Is there politically correct term now for geriatric people?
See, I think
elders,
the
two
commonly used terms in psychiatry are either older adults or the elderly. And of course, if you want to be technical about it, yeah, the term geriatric psychiatry or geriatric depression is still used. So
yeah,
I guess you just don't call them old people anymore.
Exactly. Or what about seniors? Because now I'm seeing, you know, when you qualify for senior breakfast, that's young. I don't consider that, I don't know, maybe because I'm getting...
getting close.
I mean, that doesn't sound like, you know, I would be a senior at that point. So
technically speaking, you know, when we talk about older adults, we are talking about people who are 65 and older.
Okay.
So...
What kind of special needs do
those people have? Why might it be important for everybody to tune in, because someday you might be 65 too?
Well, yeah, that too, you know, understanding about the challenges of older age. A lot of us might be directly or indirectly involved in care of an elderly. It could be a family member, a neighbor, or somebody. So I think it's important to get an idea of what lies ahead.
Well, there's a lot of issues that affect the elderly or the older population. You know, as they're getting older, their friends that they grew up, their family members, their siblings are dying, are passing away, illness. A lot of them are affected with a lot of illness. The things that they could do before, they no longer can. You know, they don't have the energy. They don't have, the body probably just can't do it anymore. And so there's a lot of issues that, you know, could trigger depression.
And I think Maria, you have summed it up pretty well, because two of the major contributing factors to elderly depression is, you know, medical illness, which can cause disability, you know, physical or cognitive, and also loss of support systems, you know, friends, family, spouse. So, and of course, medical problems are related to loss of independence and loss of control over life.
No, I think the interesting part for me is that this would be ubiquitous in getting old. Everybody's going to have to deal with, if everybody who continues to live,
true,
is going to have to deal with loss and is going to have to deal with diminished physical and cognitive and emotional elasticity.
We know that. Well, we know that. And we know, just like everybody else, is that we all going to die. We are born and we die. Eventually we are going to die, but we're not ready for that.
But some people are more at risk for depression and negative thoughts. Yeah, I would even say some cultures are more at risk.
Oh,
just to look at one stat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at suicide rates, and the highest suicide rates are for older Caucasian men.
Wow.
So somebody who is, let's say, in their 80s and is a white male, they're probably at twice the risk for suicide when compared to other older adults, or four times at risk for suicide when compared to just the general population. So I think there's a lot to do with cultural and gender issues too.
Explain culture.
Well, I think we might just go off in a big tangent.
We might, but we've got an hour.
Okay. So with culture, it's different. Like I said, you know, not everybody who's older gets depressed. It depends on how you handle life. Do you accept old age as something that's graceful and cherished and respected, or do you take old age as something as a weakened part of your life? You know, you're not able to be as productive, you're not able to be as independent, do all the things that you like. So it depends on how you view life and how you accept old age, that you either can feel negative about it or actually be proud of it. Because in some cultures, you know, some Asian cultures, old age is respected.
Yes, they are. Uh-huh. Yes, they are.
But not here.
Well, I mean, the thing is, depends how But like the Dr. Shimachari says, it's just the culture. You know, and I'll do it personally. My father, he's 79, and when he was young, he went to the war. He was an amateur boxer. He loved water skiing. He loved horseback riding. But as he's getting older and he's had one heart attack and things, you know, are slowing down, and I can see that he gets, you know, he gets melancholy or the depression, you know, just depressed that he can't do the things that he was used to doing and he enjoys doing, and he still loves it, but he just can't do it. He just can't.
Mm-hmm. Almost nostalgic.
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah, I guess that's why CBT, or cognitive behavioral therapy, works well for depression and elderly too.
Could it work? I mean, uh-huh. Because, well, the thing is that a lot of older people are so set in their ways.
True.
Good example. There's my father. There's no way that he could probably, yeah. You know, change, or it's just, you know, he's just
definitely there. Are definitely challenges, different challenges for different age groups, and for the elderly, definitely mm-hmm. what you say is correct. But the other thing is, like what I was referring to earlier when I mentioned, like when I mentioned CBT, was that there are a lot of things you cannot change when you're older. So at some point, you learn to accept it. And then you don't, you know, worry about it or fret about it as much. So it's maybe developing some sense of acceptance, mm-hmm. contentment, and, you know, compromise. So.
I wonder if there's a sense of almost entitlement with the elderly, our elders, that I have a right to feel regretful, bitter, because of all of these losses, because of these, I can't do my favorite things anymore. Mm-hmm. And maybe, I mean, maybe part of this whole process might be kind of letting, you know, wondering, you know, kind of working through, I guess, with them if they really want to have that right, if it's really doing them that much good in the long run.
Well, I think it's tough when you kind of call it entitlement, because I think it ties into the personality of a person. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, you could be entitled, and then if that is your personality trait, then you might be less flexible, less able to cope with stress. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, and it's that's why some of the psychotherapies are tough. The personalities are set, the way you cope with stresses in life is pretty much set at the end of life. So that's why you cannot do a whole lot of, let's say, you know, personality changing, psychodynamic theories with the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be more problem solving, you know, conflict resolution, things like that. So yeah, in a way, you know,
it's kind of like the adage, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I mean, that's almost what I'm hearing.
It's tough.
It's tough.
But I think you should not
spend your whole life.
It depends on each one. It's on a individual basis.
Yes, I think it's tough to kind of generalize anything in life, and especially so in the elderly, because, you know, there are a lot of elderly who are content, who are productive, who are happy, either, you know, by themselves?
Still active.
Still with
and they're still active to what to the extent that they can be active.
Yeah.
They're still.
And feeling good about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
337-8874. If you're one of those early rising, happy elderly people, give us a call. Dr. Simmons had here. You can ask us questions and stuff. This is KUBO. We are Radio Bilingue, sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health. And that's it, huh?
Yes, and our phone number here at the station is 337-8874.
And that's my top of the hour break. We're going to stay right with us because we started a little bit late today.
Yes. All right. What are regarding medication? Is it difficult? I mean, they have so... a lot of elderly people are taking medication for their health reasons, you know, high blood pressure, you know, cholesterol, you know, they're probably diabetic. You know, there's so many other, they have so many issues. And then now here comes somebody that's been, you know, diagnosed with being depressed. Now you give them another one.
So I think the comment you made can be addressed in, you know, several different ways. One, medications can cause depression, and medications can complicate treatment for depression too.
Okay.
So just like, you know, what you mentioned about blood pressure medications, which is commonly used in elderly, you know, something like beta blockers, you know, Toprol or Inderol, things like that, those can cause depression. Medications, tranquilizers, you know, medications that are used for anxiety, whether it is Xanax or Ativan or Valium, those can cause a person to be depressed, and these risks are higher in the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't know the exact numbers, but depending on, you know, what study you look at, an older adult could be taking anywhere between 7 to 15 medications. So, you know, if you start treatment for depression, then you have to worry about what, you know, do I add one more medication?
Yeah,
and that's why I think, you know, maybe if I have some time, we'll talk about treatment of depression too, because it's not just medication. It's not medication and just psychotherapy. You also have still a modality called ECT or electroconvulsive therapy, which is safely and very effectively used in the elderly. So maybe later on, once we have some time, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, let's work through assessment. We'll get a picture of how, you know, so you have somebody who's taking maybe 7 to 15 on the average medications, and now you've got possible side effects from each of those medications or any kind of synergistic combination of medications, but you've also got 7 to 15 diagnosed health conditions. Might those also contribute to depression?
Oh, definitely. And I think it goes both ways. Any kind of impairment caused by medical conditions, heart disease, you know, stroke, they can cause depression, not only by changing brain structure and function, but also causing impairments because of the limitations that they impose on the elderly. And the opposite is true too. People who get depressed are more at risk for getting heart problems and other medical conditions. So it goes both ways.
So primary doctors must be very important and able to be to detect the depression. Because a lot of the elderly people, I mean, if they're taking between 7 to 15 medications, you know, they have a primary doctor. The primary doctor should be aware or should be, wait a minute, what's going on, you know?
I think...
And make referrals.
Yeah.
And come to us.
Yeah. You're correct. Primary care is where you want to catch a lot of this.
Yeah.
And I think in recent years there has been a push to screen for elderly depression. People have been coming up with geriatric depression scales and all. And primary care is the place to use it. And I think primary care physicians do a fairly good job, but depression in the elderly complicates it and makes it tougher for primary care physicians to sometimes even identify depression. But a lot of primary care physicians do treat depression in the elderly, and as far as I have seen, treat it well, or in the sense with the right kind of medication.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because there are so many other medications that an elderly person takes that you need to take a medication that interacts the least with the other medications they are taking. But the other challenge in primary care and depression in the elderly is depression does not present like how it does in a younger adult. So you do not have the, you know, sense of worthlessness or hopelessness or, you know, just sadness, crying, what you might have is more physical and mental symptoms. It could be aches and pains. It could be, you know, palpitations that you're having. It could be just some memory loss, not being able to concentrate. So sometimes it's tough. So that's why I think geriatric psychiatry is a much needed specialty. But unfortunately, not a lot of people are interested or want to invest that extra time to actually learn about geriatric mental health. Because on one hand, you need to have an understanding of the medical challenges a geriatric person faces. And then you also need to understand how they can mimic depression, or how depression can mimic mental illness, medical illness too. Mm-hmm. So it's a very challenging topic.
Is there a shift in consciousness now? I mean, we've noted a lot of types of stigma reduction and common acceptance, and honestly, right now, if you're middle-aged, a significant number of middle-aged people take antidepressants and mm-hmm. anxiety medication pretty commonly now. It's almost not uncommon. With geriatric people, with people who right now are the generation of the elders, their stigma issues ran a little bit deeper, perhaps. And certainly mental health care, when they were growing up 50, 60,
yeah.
70 years ago, might have given them good cause for that. Do you sense that seniors are beginning to advocate for more mental health care, that they're more accepting of it, that there's programs or legislation that support geriatric care now, psychologically?
I don't have like hard facts or numbers. My feeling is yes. The population in general has seen a lowering of stigma. The society is a little bit more accepting of mental illness in young adults or the elderly. So it definitely makes it a little bit easier, or gives a respectable way out for the elderly who might be having some problem with mental health issues. So the answer is yes. I feel that the stigma has lessened and might have encouraged some elderly to kind of come out with a mental illness. But here's the catch, too. The one thinking about why depression in older adults is different from depression in younger adults is exactly what you had alluded to a little while ago about stigma.
Mm-hmm.
Given the stigma about mental health during their younger years mm-hmm. or early in life, it's easier to have complaints, physical complaints, or, you know, a physical
more
illness.
Socially acceptable.
Yes, socially acceptable form of an illness, rather than having depression or some form of mental illness. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's one aspect of it. Maybe that's why, you know, depression in the elderly is the way it is, with all kinds of physical symptoms and not as much of the classic, you know, what we call major depressive symptoms in the younger adults, where they're a little bit more open about the symptoms.
Hmm. How much does sleep play a role in this? Because I know one of the challenges as we age is getting a good night's sleep.
Sleep in the elderly, I think, it's a topic in its own. Sleep is essential mm-hmm. for everybody, of course, you know, for physical health, mental health,
mental
and it's
health,
more
yeah.
so for the elderly, because the quality of their sleep is not that good. Sometimes I hear that, you know, the elderly cannot, don't need as much sleep, or they sleep less, and that's fine, that's part of old age. That's probably not the entire truth. The entire truth is, the quality of sleep is, you need just as much sleep
uh-huh.
as anybody else, but you are not able to sleep as well. So you need to spend more time in your bed to get the same amount of hours. So.
Another thing that we've come aware is about elderly people is that they, besides their medication, either they self-medicate or use other substances or alcohol, you know, and that can contribute to depression, you know, especially the alcohol use.
Oh, definitely. That, pain medications, you know, other anxiety-related medications, all of these have, again, most things in psychiatry are a two-way street. The same thing here. Like, you know, you can have people self-medicate by drinking alcohol, to numb their feeling of loss, or whatever else it might be. And all these substances can also cause a worsened depression.
You get chickens and eggs running all over the place. Yeah, I think sleep and medical issues and
Exactly. So it is a topic that needs to be, it's important, especially, like I said, we're all going to get in that age, you know, we're all going to be elderly at one point, and, you know, our loved ones, our parents right now, you know, like I said, my dad's 79, and he has health issues, and, you know, I can see that he sometimes gets melancholy, you know, things that he could do, and now he can't do, and I see that, you know, and so that's a concern that affects everyone here.
We're here with Dr. Vijay Chimanchetti. 337-8874 is the phone number if you've got calls, concerns, questions about.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service. Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
So you've been studying this geriatric stuff, huh?
Well, well, let me give you a little history. Well, I was always interested in the elderly since I was a young kid. And now that I'm a psychiatrist, I can kind of trace back some of the roots as to where this might have begun. I was very close to my paternal grandfather. He was a role model for me, and I looked up to him. Very capable man.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived into his 80s. So I think that's where my sense of comfort and belonging to the elderly, you know, came from. And that kind of continued as life went on, any other older person. And then again, I moved away from India. I came to the United States about 8 years ago. So, you know, any older person I talked with, you know, it created a sense of warmth, and it was very comfortable, very rewarding.
Yeah,
and, you know,
so much. I mean, it is. And I can hear that because I see that too. When you talk to somebody elderly, they have so much information and the stories that they have and, you know, how it was back then. And
that's very interesting that you say that. Not everybody feels that way. And the reason I can see, which, you know, I think is one of the obvious ones, is that, you know, have you had a positive experience with an older adult when you were younger, when in your developing years, when you were a little bit more tolerant and impressionable? If you had a good experience, sure, you know, you'll still appreciate older adults when you are an adult yourself. But if you had a mean, irritable, old, you know, older adult at home, grandparents or somebody, you might not be as tolerant of an older adult when you are young yourself, you know, a young adult yourself. So I think it's, yes, it's nice that, you know, you yourself feel comfortable and nice being around older adults, but not a lot of people have the patience for that. So that's one of the sad things about life.
And one day, and the thing is, one day, like I said, we're all going to be older, so.
I'm going to make older cool, so get ready for that. It's going to be popular. No more of this Bart Simpson stuff where, you know, the kids are smart and the adults aren't so smart. And grandpa's like out of it.
Oh.
Now we're going to switch that around. It's time to switch that. And we'll do that after the baby boomers kind of move out of the way. So stay tuned.
I have no idea what you said, but that's okay.
Well, because it's not cool. No, part of the, you know, one of the issues elderly may struggle with is it's not cool to be old, not in general. And old, like
in
media,
in,
for example.
It's in different cultures, you know, that's, like we said earlier, it's different cultures. You know, for some cultures, you know, they see us to become old is not good. And look at the advertisement. We get so much, you know, a lot of people are into cosmetic surgery, you know, trying to look young, all these creams, lotions.
No desperation there, is there?
Everything just to prolong the age, just to prolong from getting old. You're still going to get old, but they don't want
to. 30 or something.
They don't want to look old. Now, there's other cultures that, you know what, they come with old age, and young people learn from the older people, and it's just different. So.
Maria, let's talk about what you just mentioned about, you know, not being comfortable with aging and people going in for surgeries and other kinds of stuff. Do you feel there's a difference between genders in that? Like, you know, of course, you're of opposite genders, so.
It used to be, but now it's getting closer because there's a lot more men going into getting cosmetic surgery and getting the hair implants, getting, you know, the liposuction and getting
Botox.
I'm not sure, but I know people that have gotten their abs. You know,
and just
so men are.
And you know, look at you know, what might be a very popular ad on TV for targeted older men, and it's
medication. That's true.
You know,
the medication.
About,
that's true.
Yeah. And you're still talking about, you know, take Cialis, Viagra, whatever else, you know.
I mean, back here, you also Promax for prostate stuff. It's like that whole generation is being targeted now.
Yes. So.
So then, you know, eventually they realize, oh my God, I'm old. You know, they can't do anything else. I mean, they just, depressed, you know, reality sets in.
Yeah, the thing is to be a realist. You know, I think a very good way to go through life is being a realist, you know, understanding your limitations as a child, you know, appreciating what you have when you're young, and then accepting what you have left over as an older adult. And I think that that gives you a sense of peace and acceptance, and then you're not struggling with all the things that you have lost, because people chase after the past. You know, every day that goes by, we are not as quick.
Mm-hmm.
Every day that goes by, our memory is not as sharp. You know, our ability to learn new things dulls with each day that goes by. So, you know, do you accept that as being normal, or do you go away out of your way, especially in this materialistic and superficial society of ours, do you chase after a superficial sense of beauty or, you know, desirability? So if you do that, yeah, of course, there's no contentment and you have lots of people who are depressed. But just quickly going back to what we were talking about, you know, genders and their acceptance of old age and how it might tie into depression, you know, I think one could safely say that women, especially in a male-dominant society, are probably more under pressure to look a certain way, you know, and maybe the pressures for them as they grow older are slightly more than for men. But if you look actually at rates of depression in the elderly, it doesn't show that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So losing beauty and losing power are
I think they kind of catch up.
Oh, wow.
Because let me give you an idea of how kind of depression varies through age groups.
Hmm.
When you are prepubescent, you know, before puberty, you look at boys versus girls. Boys tend to be more at risk for depression. You come into the reproductive years, let's say just when you compare it for, let's say, from a female standpoint of view, you know, from starting of, like, menarche, when you start your periods, to, let's say, menopause, when you stop it. During this time, females actually have more depression.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, you know, males and females have depression pretty much the same. And I think what happens is older males, especially as they go towards an extreme of age, probably have more depression than women, and the suicide rates are way higher.
It's like they couldn't do, it's like it's the power. I mean, they're supposed to be the dominant, they're supposed to be the caregivers, they're supposed to be, you know, overseen, and well, like the caregiver, the main caregiver, they no longer can do that.
And I'm wondering how much of this is biological, how much of this is, you know, environmental, driven by society, the general role models, expectations of different genders, and how much women might be better at accepting reality. If I can make an extreme statement, if women traditionally have been second-class citizens, if women have always been discriminated against and still do, maybe they're better at coping with loss of power or ability because, you know, they never had it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, and they were used to having stuff taken away from them.
Yes, so maybe that could be another aspect that, you know, supports the difference between depression in older males and older females.
We love extreme statements on our Let's Talk About It. Dr. Vijay Chimanchetti, 337-8874 is the phone number. We're going down the home stretch. We've got about 13 minutes left. If you have any questions about aging or anything like that, be sure to give us a call, 337-8874. So, kind of shifting from this, like the attraction to youth, and a lot of these are cognitive issues that maybe we can address in treatment through cognitive behavioral type stuff.
We use a lot of, we use cognitive behavioral therapy, but is it effective? Is it towards the older population?
It depends, because you can use, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy is a big topic, mm-hmm. big, you know, tool
broad,
in itself.
Yeah.
So you can, definitely, it's not applicable for everybody, and it's especially true for the elderly. You know, somebody with poor cognition, or somebody who's got memory loss, somebody who cannot remember things, you know, they cannot do their homework, as it's called in CBT. Somebody who cannot remember things, you know, you might not be able to use all kinds of CBT techniques with them. I think, in my understanding, the thing that's usually worked well from a cognitive behavioral therapy point of view for the elderly is to change their thinking in a way where they accept some of the things that they have, things that cannot be changed, and not beat their head against a rock.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if there are any negative thoughts, recurring thoughts, you know, self-critical thoughts that come related to this, then you'd help them identify that and stop it.
So, for coming in, I mean, I'm thinking of somebody coming into our system and trying getting assessed, because if, let's say they show all these symptoms of depression, and, you know, they're taking, but how do we, is it to our, do we rule out other issues, other health issues? In other words, let's say that it's the symptoms of Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
It could be dementia. It could be, you know, something else.
And Alzheimer's
that,
could be depression.
Well, yes, yeah.
No,
but,
it's,
you know.
It's true. It's
what,
like it's a chicken and egg thing again.
Yeah, exactly. What? How do we treat
you,
that? Because it gets complicated, you know. It's just they have medications because of health issues, but let's say they also have some beginnings of Alzheimer's.
Let me make you know, answer your question in a general kind of way. Let me start with what Imperial County Behavioral Health has
mm-hmm.
for the elderly. For many years, the focus was not as much on the older adults. Now there is more focus. We have a program called the FAST program. So it's FASS, the Senior Access to Support and Services. And you have a team, a case manager, a psychiatrist, which is me, and there's Dr. Camacho, who also works with the program. We are providing mental health care to the elderly, and sometimes we even go do home visits. So, you know, a lot of elderly have a lot of medical conditions. Some of them might be wheelchair bound or bed bound.
Or home bound, even if they are ambulatory.
So, you know, sometimes it takes that extra effort to kind of go visit somebody
out
at home.
Yeah.
So we have a good program in place at Imperial County Behavioral Health for the elderly. The only catch being the way the policies are written, the way maybe the funding is given to the county, and I'm sure administrative staff might be in a better position to answer this, but we do not treat dementia itself.
Mm-hmm.
If dementia comes with some other psychiatric conditions, such as depression that we are talking about, and it does happen, you know, you can have dementia, and depression is more common in people. And actually, again, it's again the chicken and egg thing. Depression can cause cognitive decline, and we'll talk a little bit about that in just a minute. So we do not, at Imperial County Behavioral Health, we just don't treat just dementia. Unfortunately, right now it's just treated by primary care providers, neurologists. One of the reasons could be because we do not have a geriatric psychiatrist among us. I have had some interest and experience in geriatric psychiatry, so I'm part of this program. Let's talk a little bit about dementia and depression itself. Now, Alzheimer's is one of the, you know, most common forms of dementia. And about 17% of the people who have dementia, Alzheimer's disease, have depression. When it comes to other forms of dementia, like vascular dementia, which in simple terms is you have mini strokes in your brain and it, you know, kills some parts of your brain, disrupts function,
mm-hmm.
and you have depression as a result. That, if in those forms of dementia, depression tends to be more common, and it's
mm-hmm.
called vascular dementia. There's another term that's used in when you talk about dementia and depression. It's called pseudo-dementia. What it is when an older person is depressed, they don't have the motivation to be involved and answer questions. So when you're talking to the person might just be quiet. Most of the answers that you're asking, you might not get a response for, and then you're wondering, is this a person with
mm-hmm.
cognitive
yeah.
decline because of dementia? And those kind of people are called people with pseudo-dementia. It's good and bad, if you hear that term. Good because you can treat depression, and the cognitive decline will decrease or go away. But the sad part is, once you have depression in an older person, it puts you at risk for dementia again. So again, it begins the whole chicken and egg thing.
Wow.
So how do you, as a psychiatrist, what kind of treatment options do you look at?
Well, as a psychiatrist, there are many treatments available. You have medications, and we'll talk about that. You have psychotherapy, and we already talked a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have other forms of treatment, the main one being ECT, or electroconvulsive therapy. So when you, let's talk about medications briefly.
Mm-hmm.
There are many different medications available for treatment of depression in the elderly. But as a psychiatrist, as any physician, you want to pick a medication that has the least side effects and does not react
with the
whole medication. Bunch of medications that they're already taking.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's why you have to have an understanding of how the medications work in the body, how they react with each other, and that, I think, is part of training in geriatric psychiatry. One medication, and again, you know, this might ring, if anybody's listening, anybody who is older, is being treated for depression, this might, you might be able to identify with this. One of the commonest medications used for depression is a medication called Lexapro. The reason why it's used is because it does not, one, it's mild, it has relatively few side effects, but it also does not react with other medications in the way other antidepressants do. So it's got less drug-to-drug interactions. That this medication then becomes much more important in the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
So I have not seen the data as such in the elderly, but I think Lexapro or escitalopram, as the generic name is the most commonly prescribed antidepressant. And I would not be surprised if that's the most commonly used one for elderly too. So that's what you want to look at when you look at medications and for, you know, treatment of depression in the elderly. Psychotherapy, of course, we talked about CBT a little bit. The other thing they talk about is interpersonal therapy. So, you know, if an older person is having conflicts with someone else,
mm-hmm.
you know, it could be a spouse, a partner, a colleague, whoever, you then try to resolve that. You know, teach people problem-solving skills. Teach people to overcome grief, loss. So, you know, that form of psychotherapy is helpful also, apart from CBT. Now that we have some time, I would like to talk a little bit about electroconvulsive therapy, because I think it's a topic that, you know, brings strong reactions in people.
Maybe even more so from that generation.
Well, yeah, when I hear electro, I'm imagining, you know, somebody strapped to their table, table, and given, like, shock treatment.
Yeah, and that used to be the case at some point, like in the past. And I think there were movies depicting the, you know,
one
the procedure.
Flew over the cuckoo's nest.
Yeah.
And One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was a movie that showed things in pretty much in the light they were at that time. But it also has done a lot of damage. But it also, I think, has done some good. It has done damage because people have shied away from a treatment that's effective just because it was done in a barbaric way in the past. Just because there was so much negative attention on the procedure, it forced people using the procedure to come up with more humane ways of doing it, because it's an effective treatment after all. So in the past, yes, Maria, like you said, you know, people would hold people down, strap them down, and then you would pass an electric current through their brain, and, you know, people would have a seizure, they would shake, and, you know, people would still hold them down, and they would try to contract the muscles, have fractures, break bones, whatnot, and it would be a And they would be awake, so it would be a very uncomfortable, unpleasant experience.
Not pretty.
No, not pretty at all.
No.
Not for people around watching them, not for the person experiencing it. Right now, it's very different. You have the procedure, it's done under general anesthesia, so you don't actually, you're not awake to experience all the, you know, unpleasantness that might come with the procedure. You have muscle relaxants that are used with the procedure, which means that your body kind of goes into a shock paralysis, so you do not have the violent contractions and breaking of the bones like it used to happen in the past.
Important with elderly because their bones
are very fragile.
Yeah. So you have a psychiatrist, you have an anesthesiologist, you have, you know, nurse or nurses, and these are people who have been trained in a safer form of treatment, which has evolved considerably over the years. it's probably one of the most effective treatments we have for depression, especially for severe depression, especially for depression with psychotic features, which means that in some forms of depression, and more so in case of elderly, you have some paranoia or some delusions, which are some false beliefs. You know, somebody's out to get me, somebody's stealing things, and things along those lines. So for these forms of depression, ECT is probably the best treatment there is, probably the fastest treatment there is. Because if you look at medicines, mm-hmm. like even the good one that I talked about, Lexapro, mm-hmm. probably maybe, you know, just to throw a number out, maybe 60% of the people respond to the medicine, 40% don't.
And not the same day they start to take it.
And yes, yeah, they don't, because it takes about a month and a half. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, it's, and usually it's longer for the elderly because you start at the lower dose because you have to be careful about tolerability mm-hmm. and side effects.
And liver function.
Yeah.
So medications are, even though they use as first line because it's convenient and easy to do, electroconvulsive therapy is faster because you can see response as soon as you give the first or second treatment. And how it happens is it's very short. You know, you go in the morning fasting and you're given a general anesthetic. You are given a muscle relaxant, which is stop acting mm-hmm. again. You get the electric shock, which is controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be, depending on, you know, the person, the psychiatrist is doing it, could just be given to one side of the brain or two sides of the brain. But it is over really quick. You know, a seizure is induced. It's usually, you know, less than a minute. And once you have that done, a person is going to take, you know, they start coming out of the anesthesia, they're kept out in the room, they recover fast. You could have a response to depression even with the first treatment for some. Usually it takes a couple. But so what happens is you have a treatment maybe two times, three times a week, and it goes on for maybe 8 to 10 times. That is a course of ECT. 80% of the people who have this form of depression respond to it. And this mm-hmm. is pretty quick mm-hmm. when compared to treatments. And 80% is a big number in treatment of psychiatric conditions, especially mm-hmm. depression. Some people, however, might need repeat courses mm-hmm. of ECT. Some people might need maintenance. It could be maybe they come in once a month, and it's an outpatient procedure, you know.
Is there any side effects? Any health risks?
Yes. You have, you know, like any form of treatment, this also has side effects. But it's monitored.
Mm-hmm.
Your blood pressure can go up. Your heart rate can go up. If you have problems with your heart, then yes, this needs closer monitoring.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about, the older people
yeah.
get a heart attack. Right,
but the thing is, now the procedure has developed to a point that people, even with pacemakers, defibrillators, can get ECT under the right circumstances. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not just those side effects, but you can also have side effects as some memory loss. It could be short-term and can be long-term. Long-term memory loss is unusual. Short-term memory loss is pretty common. Usually happens for that time around the procedure. So maybe a few days before the procedure, maybe a day or two after the procedure. But then as time goes by, some of these memories seem to get better. So my bottom line on this procedure is it's safe. It's very effective. Probably effective and safe when compared to medicines. And unfortunately, it's not used as much.
It's an option. It's another option.
Well, it's a very effective option.
And I'm sorry, I'm like the devil's advocate person right now. But let's say that probably if somebody agrees to this type of treatment, that they must really want to get better because of just the natural kind of perceptions about this that a non-medical person would have. I wonder if that influences your success data.
Well, not really. Now, you...
Kind of like the placebo thing?
Kind of, but with electricity.
See, but
electricity.
Yeah, the thing is, people who are so severely repressed are not as motivated for treatment or not as insightful. So you won't have them jumping out for, you know, I need to go see a psychiatrist, let me get some kind of treatment, especially ECT.
Well, but at some point they have to consent to this, though, right?
Yes, they do have to.
Yeah.
But it's usually family members who bring them in, saying that, you know, my grandfather, my grandmother, mm-hmm. my parent, they're spending a lot of time in the room. They don't get out of bed. They're tired all the time. They cannot concentrate like they used to. You know, some things happen. And this started happening after my mother passed away or my father passed away. And then you're thinking maybe it is depression in the elderly. So these are not people who will, you know, jump out and say, I need to go find an effective
yeah.
treatment for myself because they're not even aware.
No, and they're depressed.
Yeah, and they're depressed. And they might be thinking it's something, you know, some other medical condition going on because that's what they used to. Because a lot of elderly have way more medical problems than psychiatric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I would probably say if that would happen to my loved one, say, you know what, they probably have Alzheimer's. That would be my first thing.
That's where your pseudo-dementia term comes in, because it's...
And my wife already told me she's just going to put me in a chair on the porch and let the sun burn me up. So we have our late-stage plans.
I can do that.
Final thoughts, Doctor?
We've
come to the end of another exciting adventure.
I think what it is elderly depression is definitely a big problem. It's under-recognized. We are glad that Imperial County Behavioral Health is making more efforts to kind of help the elderly in this regard. There are effective treatments that are available in the form of medications and non-medication alternatives, psychotherapy, and even ECT. We don't do ECT in Imperial Valley, but in San Diego, it's definitely an option for people for whom it's practical.
And just like I said, this is a very important topic because we, one day, will be older.
Yes.
So.
Well, and right now, many people are caring for their parents. You're absolutely right when you brought that up, and this may be something they want to be aware of in terms of, of how, just kind of keeping in touch, checking in, seeing how parents feel, how they're doing, how much energy they have, how much peace and pleasure they're having in their life right now.
True.
Because maybe somebody could do that to me.
I know.
Thank you for coming aboard today, Doc.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for having me. We need to have you here before. Someday again this year. Next week, we're going to be at the Imperial County Health Fair. And that's going to, I think we're going to be live. And it's going to be Wednesday, correct?
Yes.
It's going to be Wednesday?
October 14th.
October
Wednesday.
The 14th from, I think, from 10 to 2 o'clock. So stay tuned next week. We're going to have live show. We're going to probably, I'm going to be there. And I'm going to... interview people on the spot. So
heck, if Dr. Simoncetti shows up to get his blood cholesterol checked for free,
yes, that's true. That's
we'll grab him. Nice. We'll get him on the air.
So we'll be there, Happy, in front of the right there in the quad, right by the courthouse.
Yeah, and all health providers, health people, doctors. There's going to be all sorts of health related stuff there, and we're going to grab people and have interviews all day long. So
and
mark that on your calendar.
And actually, the other thing, you guys are going to play. Are you?
Us guys?
Yes, the outpatients. Los outpatients.
Los Cisnes. there's been a rumor that there's going to be live music at the County Health Fair.
Which includes Scott.
So we'll make sure and turn the PA system away from the radio microphone. And join us down there if you can't come live.
Free food,
time
prices. It'll be fun.
Be sure and listen on the radio. We'll have lots of health information. It'll be a great show.
Okay. Thank you, and have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KGBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.